The best tunes of all moved to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all moved to Carnegie Hall.
The best tunes of all moved to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all moved to Carnegie Hall.
It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Tonight at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to test your wits against those of a board of four know-it-alls. You provide the questions and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is muffed, you get a Junior Britannica plus a $50 war bond plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Tune in same time, same station, next Friday night, Lincoln's birthday, February 12th, when the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information, Please. Lucky Strike hopes that you will continue to listen in to Information, Please under its new sponsor. And Lucky Strike wishes to take this opportunity of thanking Mr. Fadiman, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Levant for the many pleasant hours they have furnished us all under our sponsorship. And now, light up a Lucky, as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
And we, too, are very glad to hear that the performers on Information, Please have provided our audience with so many pleasant hours. Now, tonight, Information, Please continues on its go-as-it-will and unrehearsed path. Our board, consisting of our regulars, Franklin P. Adams, Oscar Levant, and John Kieran of the New York Sun and other papers. And tonight they're joined by an old friend of ours, the creator of Mrs. Miniver, Jan Strutter, who tomorrow morning will receive from the University of Pennsylvania the degree of Doctor of Letters. How does it feel to be called a doctor, Jan?
I don't know.
Well, we're going to begin with a question from Roland Parr of Baltimore, Maryland. Get two out of three if you can. It's about the sun. From these descriptions of the sun at different times of day, identify the source of each of these phrases. Here's the first. Shines bright. Shines bright. Mr. Kieran.
On my old Kentucky home.
That's right. Shines bright on my old Kentucky home. Now we're going to have another shine. Shining with all his might. Shining with all his might. Mr. Trevor.
It's from the waters and the carpenter.
How's it go?
Sun was shining on the sea, or might be sand, shining
sea.
With all his might.
Yes, it's from Alice in Wonderland, as you say. I think it's Tweedledee who sings the song, unless I'm greatly mistaken. Mr. Adams, you're usually the bear on Alice in Wonderland. Remember, was it Tweedledee? Or in the Walrus and the Carpenter song?
Walrus and the Carpenter.
I know it's the Walrus.
You think it is? All right.
I know it is.
Here's another and last. Shines best. Shines best.
My
Here's
son, that. My son? No.
No, no. Shines best.
Shine on Harvest Moon?
You have to shine best, Oscar.
Well, I'm not.
Mr. Adams?
That wouldn't be a Horatio Alger book. Tony the Bootblack. He shined best.
Frank, I don't know where you pick these things up. Miss Strother.
There's an old Scottish folk song, The Sun Shines Best on My Ain Country. Would it be that?
Well, that's a beautiful one.
The sun shines east, the sun shines west, the sun shines best on my mammy.
Yeah.
Gee, it took me a long
Very
time.
Very good. That's absolutely right. You ought to take a short course in sibilation sometime. But that's quite right. And I think Miss Struthers is quite right also. Now, how about this one from Thomas R. Wade of New York City? Here are the names of three royal ladies. None of them could keep their men. Rather, none of whom could keep her man. Now, the first is Dido. Why couldn't she keep her man? Which man, Mr. Kieran?
It was Aeneas. He couldn't keep him because he sailed away. He wouldn't stay in Carthage. He was on his way to found Rome.
Yes, so why should he have deserted such a lovely lady?
He had orders from the gods to move on.
Yeah. People were more religious in those days. Yes, and you'll find that, the whole story, Mr. Kieran.
In Virgil's Aeneas.
Right. And how about...
Book one.
Book one. How about Nausicaa, Nausicaa?
That isn't what it sounds like, is it?
No, it's different. You'll find this in It's a Greek name, Oscar. And Miss Strother?
Well, it is in the Odyssey, and I think she tried to keep Ulysses or Odysseus, didn't she?
Yes. Don't put it that way. She tried to keep him with her. Would be
keep him with her.
<Thank
your pardon. laughs>
And why couldn't she do so, Miss Strother?
Well, why, he was just a roaming sort of man, wasn't he?
Well, that would be a reason for
him. She changed him into something else.
You got the wrong man.
He got a new sponsor.
Well, as a matter of fact, Ulysses wanted to get back to his old sponsor, who was Penelope. And that was the reason that he didn't stay with Nausicaa. Is that pronounced Nausicaa or Nausicaa, John?
I'll leave that to Frank.
Nausicaa.
You like Nausicaa better?
No question.
For some reason, Ulysses wanted to get home to his legitimate wife, Penelope.
That was his story.
That's the way Homer has it, Mr. Adams. Now, how about this royal lady, Lo-Sen, Lo-T-S-E-N. Why couldn't she keep her man? Plus, first you have to know who Lo-Sen is.
Is that the Meditia Sen? General Sen?
No. Was that the Japanese name of Madame Butterfly?
No. It's an idea,
though.
It
should be.
No. No, it's the heroine of Lost Horizon by James Hilton. And remember, when she leaves Shangri-La with the hero, she suddenly gets Mr. Levant.
That was Margot. She didn't fool me either.
Well, what happened? What happened to Margot?
Well, at Shangri-La, she didn't age, and when she left, she suddenly grew a beard.
That's right.
I didn't mean it that way. I mean,
I know
what
you mean. Yeah, sure.
Figuratively. She got very old in the nick of time.
Yes, that's right. Well, we got 2 out of 3 on those at least. Now, how about this one from Fred Negre of Santa Cruz, California? In what films or plays were these songs interpolated? They weren't written for the purpose, but they were older songs that were used in what film or play? Let's have the first. That's a tough one, Mr. Levant.
It was originally in Sonny, but it was in The Male Animal.
Hey, that's very good. Remember,
I saw The Male Animal enough times.
Yeah, but I think that's very good to remember that song appeared in The Male Animal. Did you know, Mr. Struthers, that it did?
No, I didn't know it appeared in The Male Animal. I thought it was Margie.
Oh, no.
No, what's the song called, Mr. Levant?
It's called Who Stole My Heart Away.
Yeah.
You can't record that, you know.
Who is that?
It's in the second act when his wife wants to dance with the old football player, and he comes downstairs.
Yeah.
He either being Nugent or Fonda, and he sees the old light in their feet as they dance.
This is your version of the name.
Yeah.
All right, now let's have the second. Mr. Adams?
That was in The Merry Widow.
Yes. Now, go forward.
You mean in another play?
Yes, there are other plays after The Merry Widow, Mr. Adams.
I wouldn't know what that would be in.
Mr. Levant?
That was in Mr. Hitchcock's picture, The Shadow of a Doubt.
Yes, that was one of the motifs in
that
Shadow of a
Doubt. You got to see movies, too?
Yeah. Adams, if you want to make a living on this program, you better get out in the evening occasionally.
You can deduct it from your income tax, too. That's to date the brain concussion the boy had on his bicycle.
That's right, yes. Now, how about the next one? Miss Trevor?
I think that's out of Casablanca.
That's right, very good.
As time goes by,
very good, Miss Trevor. Casablanca is right. That's 3 out of 3. Very good memories. Now, how about this one from J.C. Ayers of Eugene, Oregon? To whom are these poems addressed? The first is Kipling's famous poem, If. It's addressed to whom? Not necessarily a specific name. Miss Strother?
My son.
My son. How do you know that?
Because it ends, and what is more, you'll be a man, my son.
That's exactly right, Miss Strother. Very good. Now, how about the poem, or rather song, called The Spaniard That Blighted My Life? It's addressed to whom? Mr.
Al Jolson sang it so many years, I would dedicate it to him.
Hmm? Yes, but the song itself is sung to whom?
That's all I can remember.
How about it, Mr.?
To anybody who will listen.
Well,
look to me while I tell you.
Well, what's the answer?
You.
Yes, you is the exact answer. Listen to me while I tell you of the Spaniard that blighted my life. Are you through those castanets, Adams?
Yeah.
All right. Now, how about this?
Obligato.
Paul Revere's Ride is addressed to whom? Well, well, several hands. Adams?
Quote, my children.
Yes, unquote.
Unquote.
Right. And now here are Mr. Rysdale and Mr. Cross.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Here's the ABC of smoking. It's just as simple as that. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And, ladies and gentlemen, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. Thank you, Mr. Cross. Now, how about this one? From Mrs. Catherine Ring of Montclair, New Jersey. I'm going to ask you to name for us the titles of three works of poetry or fiction that include the name of an insect.
Insect.
I-N-S-E-C-T.
The Gold Bug by Edgar Allan Poe.
That's a very good one, Mr. LeBat. Now we have two more insects to go.
Rats, Lice, and Other Things by Zinsizer.
That's right. Rats, Lice, and History by Zinser. Another one? Don't any insects come to your mind?
Aunt Jemima.
What one? Aunt Jemima.
Rats of Norway by...
Rats are not insects. They house insects.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Mr. Adams?
Rats don't count?
No, they don't count. Unless they go to school.
What about the bat? Like the Fledermaus?
Mm-hmm. The bat is...
They have insects.
Life of the bees.
The what?
Life of the bees.
Is the bee an insect, Mr. Karen?
Yes, it is.
Well, that's very good. Yes, Grub Street would be another one. Miss Carter, do you have one?
No, I was going to say Life of the Bee.
Life of the Bee, The Scarab Murder Case by S.S. Van Dyne, any of those. And how about this one from Howard F. Shout of Detroit, Michigan? What poems do these sounds suggest? The first sound, I wish we had a sound effect, is the sound of surf, which suggests to you what poems to hear.
That would be Dover Beach, I should say, by Matthew Arnold.
That would be a very good one, yes. Perhaps an even more familiar one would be one by Tennyson. John, would that...
Break, from that cold gray stone.
That would be one. How about the sound of rain dropping?
Rain, go away, come again another day.
Sure. Yes, why not?
Rain, go to Spain, we say.
Is that all that separates the two countries?
Mm-hmm.
Easily bridged. And marching feet would recall, the sound of marching feet. Mr. Adams?
Tramp, comma, tramp, comma, tramp. The boys are marching.
That's right.
By my grandfather-in-law.
Was it really?
Yes, sir.
What was his name?
George F. Root.
And he was your grandfather-in-law?
Yes,
did he put in all those commas, too? Are you his editor and amending them for? Any of those will do. Boots, Boots, Boots by Kipling. Miss Trevor, perhaps you were going to give us that one. How about this one for Mrs. R. R. Coutant of Schenectady, New York? This, again, is a musical selection, and it describes a dance. According to the title, who or what is dancing? Let's have the first. Yes, Mr. Levant.
Dance of the Miraltons in the Nutcracker Suite.
That's right. And who is...
Mirliton.
Yes. Now, what is dancing? Let's have the English on it.
That's Disney. I don't know what a Miraltons is. It's with three flutes.
Dance of the Flutes. Mr. Chairman?
I just want to say it.
Yes.
Mirliton is French for flute.
That's quite right.
Is that why I use three flutes? I never knew one.
Yeah. And now the second of these. Let's see what we can do this one. Mr. Levant?
I'm dancing with tears in my eyes.
Yeah. Sounded like you ought to be on Duffy's Tavern, Levant. Yes. I, of course, as Oscar reminded us, is the one who is dancing. And now the third and last. Well, you know, I have two hands. I have one tentative.
Very tentative.
Hand. Very tentative.
Let Miss Struthers take it.
No, go ahead.
We can afford to make
her... I was just going to say it was something vaguely North African and topical.
No.
No, it isn't even...
Prince Kaschai from the Firebird.
Hey, that's very good. What did you say?
Prince Kaschai. If you can get that in a Russian tea room with a regular dinner.
who is he? Who is doing the dancing?
Prince Kaschai.
What's his business? Does he have a profession?
In those days, all princes danced.
Is he a magician?
He was a little bit nuts, I think. Well, he was a fantastic character, a real Pushkin boy, you know.
Wasn't he a magician? Isn't it the Infernal Dance from the Firebird Suite?
Yum, bum, 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 bum.
That sounds even more infernal the way you're doing. All right, how about this one now from Lena Sudi of Port Washington? Here are some famous Britishers of fact or fiction. I'll give you a hint or two about them. Tell us who they were. The first was a Welshman who was assaulted. Who was that Welshman? Mr. Adams.
Taffy.
Prove it.
Taffy was a Welshman. Taffy was a thief.
Mm-hmm.
Taffy came to our house and stole a leg of beef.
Yeah.
And so, and I threw him down the stairs.
You've got it mixed up with the old man who wouldn't say his prayers. Mr. Kieran, you want to straighten Adams out here?
I went to Taffy's house. Taffy wasn't dead. They grabbed him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
That's right.
I hit him on the head.
Yes, I think I took up a marrow bone.
Hit him with a marrow bone.
Both of you gentlemen have got your minds on the old man who wouldn't say his prayer.
I hit an open switch.
All right, now back to this one. How about an English boy who avenged his father? This again may be fact or fiction, fable. An English boy who avenged his father.
I know an American one.
You know an Irish one?
Yeah, Maxwell Anderson's play, Winterset. That has nothing to do with this.
Not a thing. Miss Trevor?
Wouldn't it be the minstrel boy? No, he was Irish, wasn't he?
That's an English boy. Mm. Well, it's a very famous boy named Jack.
The Beanstalk boy?
Yes, the Beanstalk boy. Remember that?
English.
The giant, he robs the giant first, and then he kills the giant because the giant killed Jack's father first. And Jack was an Englishman. How about a Cornishman who won a championship? Mr. Kieran?
That was Ruby Robert Fitzsimmons.
Ruby Robert Fitzsimmons.
Freckle-faced Ruby.
That's the one. Quite right. Now, how about this one from Helen Martin of Boise, Idaho? Can you name for us the important personages who were referred to during their travels in recent years as, in the first case, Mr. Bullfinch? Estrella.
Churchill.
Churchill is right. When was he known as Mr. Bullfinch? Mr. Levant, you had your hand up, too.
No, I didn't know that much. I knew Bullfinch, that's all.
You mean you were going to tell me that Bullfinch was known as Bullfinch?
No, the age...
You can't run a program that way.
The Age of Fable, that's what I was
saying. Oh, no, that's very different. The man who wrote The Age of Fable really was Bullfinch.
That's what I said.
Yeah. We got all that straight.
Maybe they got it mixed up with Bulldog.
No, he did call himself Bullfinch.
Wasn't that on one of his trips to Washington?
I think it was... During it, wasn't there another trip that he made to the East in August 1942?
Yes, he made two trips.
Yes. It was in that August 1942 trip, but he went under the name of Bullfinch. Now, who is, name one who was referred to during her travels recently as Miss Ellen Gustafson. Miss Ellen Gustafson.
Greta Garbo.
How did you know that, Mr.
That's her name.
How did you know that?
Well, she usually stays at certain hotels.
Well, I'm certainly not going to ask you how do you know that. Yes, Miss Garbo's real name is Ellen Gustafson.
Any hotel knows that.
How about someone who was known as Admiral? Who was that? Admiral.
That's a radio company. During
his recent travels, though. Miss Trevor?
Oh, during recent travels, mm-hmm. That is President Roosevelt.
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, which recent travels?
The Casablanca Conference.
Yes, the famous Casablanca Conference. He was known as Admiral, I suppose, by some of his colleagues.
No, by the people who were sending cables.
Yes, that's right. Now, here's one from Betty Schwab of New York City. What's the name of the family whose history was traced through several generations in one or more volumes by the following novelists or writers? Thomas Wolfe, the name of the family whose adventures he chronicled, Mr. Levant.
Gant
is right. Can you name a couple of books?
Yes, Time in the River.
Yes.
Looking Backwards.
Homeward
Angels. Yes.
Looking Backwards, written by whom?
Edward Bellamy.
Well, Looking Upwards.
This is one of the most confusing programs we've ever had.
Look Homeward, Angel. That's about as close as he comes.
Time in the River, and there was another one, The Web and the Rock.
Yes, The Web and the Rock. Very good.
Surprise,
you're pretty good at this. How about John Galsworthy? He wrote, Mr. Kieran?
Foresight.
The Foresight. Yes. What is the whole series of novels called?
The Foresight Saga.
The Foresight Saga. Now, how about William Shakespeare? He wrote about a family, too, in a series of plays. Miss Trevor?
But all those Henrys and things.
What was that one? Had a last name?
Navarre.
Plantagenet.
Yeah.
Tudor.
Yeah. Mr. Kieran?
Charles Lawton would solve the whole thing.
He would if we only had him here.
They were John of Gaunt's sons.
Well, those Henrys.
York. And, well, he wrote about York, Lancaster.
Yes, the series of Henrys were the Lancaster family.
The Richards, too.
Richards weren't Lancasters, I don't believe. Were they, Mr. Kieran?
Richard of York.
York.
Richard of York is right. And now here are Mr. Cross and Mr. Rysdale.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, at auctions all over the South, year after year, the makers of Lucky's select and buy the riper, lighter, milder leaf. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Thank you, Mr. Rysdale and Mr. Cross. And now we go on with a question from M.A. Feuerstein of Bayshore, New York. Who was guilty of an offense against a country squire and was compelled to flee to London as a result of it? Mr. Carey.
W. Shakespeare against Lucy, the magistrate.
What's the story,
Mr. Carey? Oh, he was supposed to have broken a pail and disordered the deer and so forth and so on. So he lit out of town.
Yes. Well, didn't he
thought it was poaching?
I thought it was poaching,
well,
too.
Well, it's the same thing.
Same thing as what?
To break a pail and go in and chase the deer around.
Oh, I see. I beg your pardon. Well, I thought he actually did shoot.
Break a pail is an old English.
Well, poaching is breaking an egg.
And, Mr. Kieran, was there any way in which Shakespeare revenged himself on...
Yes, he did. He made him appear in Henry the Fourth, Part Two. And he lampoons him.
Yeah,
in there.
Makes a good deal of fun of him. Is that true, by the way, that story? Do we know it to be true?
By the way, Master Shallow, he is, and he has him also in The Merry Wives of the Windsor.
Oh, don't ask me, Mr. Kieran.
I forgot. Anyhow, he's in the second part of Henry.
Yes. How about someone who was guilty of an offense against a czar, against a Russian czar, and as a result had his musical work banned? This should be up your alley, Oscar.
Well, let's go through the whole list.
Yes, let's do that. I'd love to hear you. Let's get that fellow Koschei in again.
Chris Koschei. It isn't Rachmaninoff.
No.
It isn't Anton Rubin.
No,
it isn't Glinka.
No.
It isn't Rimsky-Korsakov.
Oh, yes, it is both of them.
Is it really?
Yeah. Oh, he's getting warm.
Now that you've got Rimsky-Korsakov, tell us all about it. Do you know...
I know Rimsky well, but I never knew he offended the Tsar.
Yes, he did.
I don't want to say anything about that.
I don't want to mean anything. Well, he writes something called Kukdor.
Yeah.
And apparently in the figure of King Dodor, a character in that opera, the Tsar, Nicholas II, was ridiculed. And so his work was banned, I guess not permanently.
Isn't that a ballet? No. That's an opera in which there is miming. How do you say that?
Miming?
Miming, yes.
Some of them do it in the pit, in the orchestra pit, and the singing is... No, the singing's in the pit, and the acting, that word Miss Struthers pronounces right, mm-hmm. is on the stage.
What a press agent you would make for opera, Levan. How about someone who was guilty of an offense against the Queen, and as a result had his head chopped off?
Well, that's one of the Queen Elizabeth's friends.
That's right, yes. Which one?
Essex
is quite right. That's 3 out of 3. What was his offense? Mr. Brother, what was he accused of?
He didn't put the coat down on him rainy day.
You got the idea. We're right back with that old man who wouldn't say his prayers. Now, that was Raleigh.
I know that.
That was Raleigh. His crime, or the...
How should he know it wasn't in the movie?
Essex's crime, at least the one he was accused of, was treason.
I read Strachey's book on that.
Good?
Elizabeth and Essex, by Lytton Strachey.
That's right. Did you like it?
It was never in the pictures, that book.
Miss Brother?
I saw the Errol Flynn movie.
Nice work, Doc.
This is my idea of a highly literate evening. Good gracious. Marjorie Scott of Washington, D.C., sends in a question which ties right into her place where she's living, because she wants to know the official title of Harlan F. Stone. The official title of Harlan F. Stone. Now, be careful. The exact official title of Harlan F. Stone.
Chief Supreme Court Justice. Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
No, that's wrong. That's what I would have said if I'd been in your place, Mr. Levan.
Well?
A horrible idea. Miss Struther, do you want to guess at this? An English woman wouldn't expect you to know. He is called the Chief Justice of the United States. Although, of course, he sits on the Supreme Court. That's one wrong. Now, what's the official title of William Clem? K-L-E-M. William Clem. Mr. Adams.
The official title, I do not know, but he's Head of the umpires.
But I want the official title.
I don't know.
You want to pass it on to Mr. Karen?
Yeah. John printed it once, but I've forgotten it.
I think it's chief of staff of the umpires of the National League.
That's exactly right, yes. Chief of staff of the umpires of the National League. And Admiral William D. Lay has a official title. What is it? This is really tough.
Oh, that's tough. He is liaison. He's head of the whole all the services.
Is that assistant what you call him? Head of the whole services?
No, he's assistant to the head of the whole services.
No, but that's not an official sounding title. Mr. Kieran?
Assistant to the president of the
United States. Military advisor to the president.
Well, I don't blame any of you for not getting it quite right. It's a rather difficult one to remember. His official title is chief of staff to the commander-in-chief of the United States Army and Navy.
I said chief of staff before you made me frightened.
Did you say that? I'm sorry to scare your eyes,
isn't she?
Well, I'm afraid we lose a $50 war bond on that. And a set of the Britannica going out to Miss Scott. Now, how about this one from Dorothy Hamilton of Philadelphia? Now, suppose an American soldier tells a British soldier that he's just come out of a jug and badly needs a lift, and he asks him to recommend a joint. What does the British soldier think he's talking about? Mr. Levant.
Well, the British soldier thinks he might want an elevator.
Meaning?
Lift means elevator.
That's quite right.
Joint, I don't know.
Joint of mutton.
Joint is a roast.
Joint is a roast. Is there any other...
What's the first part of
that?
He just came out of the jug. What would the Englishman think?
The Englishman would know perfectly well if he said he'd just come out of the jug. He would know that he'd just come out of jail.
He would?
Or
you have...
Or the Huska or the Caribou.
Well, you don't mean to say that you call a prisoner jail in England a Caribou... Hoosgow and Calaboose, do you?
No, but we call it the jug, and we know all the other expressions from the movies.
The corruption of your language has apparently gone on apace, Miss Brother. Yes, but the others, he would think he meant an elevator or a joint of roast beef. Well, I guess we got 3 out of 3 on that, and that's about all we'll have time for. Thank you, Miss Brother, for joining the fun this evening. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out 1 set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and 1 $50 war bond. And ladies and gentlemen, speaking of war bonds, I would like to remind all of you that 2 weeks ago, the German flyers swooped low over a London schoolhouse and deliberately murdered about 40 children. I say deliberately. One of the pilots who returned home safely announced over the German radio that the raid had been successful because, as he put it, quote, the bombs were dropped where they belonged, close quote. Just think that sentence over. The bombs were dropped where they belonged. My friends, to drop our bombs where they belong, buy war bonds and stamps.